So we're taking the association of Narottam Das Thakur on the appearance day of Lord Balaram. Anybody want to say anything else before we move on to the next thing? About the bhajan? Anything? What are you taking away from singing this bhajan? What will you remember the most? Stop taking poison. Yeah, that's pretty stark realization. Stop taking poison. How powerful the modes of nature must be that if I'm forced to drink poison, even though I know it, I still take it. I know it's going to kill me, but I take it anyway. Yeah, that's a good sutra we can take away today from this song. Stop taking poison. How do we stop taking poison, though? If the modes are so powerful,
find something better.
Harinam, find something better. That's a logical thing. Does everyone agree with that?
Yeah.
You found anything better than drinking poison? Chanting the holy names. If we can experience that, according to the acharyas, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, just once try to relish the nectar of the holy name. That's power of that taste. You know, from chanting, bhakti parishanu bhavo viraktir anyatra traisha trika eka kala, just from tasting the holy name, actually experiencing that, then it's natural, Srimad Bhagavatam says, that we'll want to drop everything else. It's natural. And if we don't have the taste, then it's natural we'll go on drinking poison. So we have it somehow or other, we have a weird taste for that. Just like camels have a taste for eating thorns. And somehow or other, they get a taste out of it because it cuts their tongue and they chew it up and it tastes like they think they're getting something out of it. So material life is like that. You know? I think I'm getting something out of it. But the holy name, actually, by tasting that, then bhakti parishanu bhava viraktir anyatra traisha trika eka kala, then we naturally develop a sense of bhakti, arises within our heart, and we're able to perceive Krishna for ourselves. And we can understand how he's in his name. Of course, nobody can understand Krishna. Even Lord Brahma said that he's not understandable. Even if you can roll up the sky, if you can count all the stars, the grains of sand, still you'll be far away from understanding Krishna. But we can understand that. What can we understand, Kishore? What can we understand?
Only if he reveals.
We'll keep passing the microphones around.
We can understand only if Krishna reveals other Sri Krishna by engaging oneself, one's senses in the service of Krishna, starting with tongue, that is by chanting and tasting prasada, Krishna will reveal himself. And that's the only way we cannot understand Krishna by our efforts or by speculation.
That's nice. That's the method. So what have you experienced? Where have you seen Krishna?
I'm just starting. One day.
We're all just starting. And, you know, Krishna's unlimited, so devotees always feel like they're just starting. Seeing Krishna every day is a new experience, right? And Krishna's unlimited, and we're tiny. So seeing Krishna, experiencing Krishna, it's always overwhelming. But also in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells some ways that we can see him like on a daily basis and remember him. Like, what are some of those? Who said? What did you say, Hari Guru? Is that us or is that the people next door? Oh, that's annoying. Okay. Can we see Krishna in that somehow? The annoying potency? What were you going to say, Hari Guru, how we can see Krishna?
The sun and the moon are his eyes, and he describes the universal form.
Have you thought about that, how the sun and the moons are his eyes? Actually asking for personal realizations here.
Hearing a lecture on this conversation between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas relating to Ajamila, and the Yamadutas were explaining how the different agencies are acting as witnesses to all the activities that are going on for every living entity. I think they count some 11 witnesses, and even Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that they also count the Supreme Lord sitting as Paramatma, and the wind, the sun, everybody else are also witness to all the activities they do. And the Lord also says that how he can be thought of as the sun. When you see the sun, you can see that Krishna is watching you. And that way, you can remind yourself to conduct properly.
But what about your realization?
I try to behave myself in the day at least, because I feel that I'm using the watch.
You see the Lord in the deities, you said? Because?
He behaves himself during the
day.
Oh,
behaves yourself during the day. Oh, but nights also. Yeah. Bhakta Patrick has one in the back.
So, I see Krishna in the heart of especially the devotees here, and every time I come to temple, it's a joy. Not too long ago, I had planted, I was planting plants around my front yard, and they didn't do very well because I didn't amend the soil properly. And so I ended up pulling all of those plants out and replanting a different type of plant after properly amending the soil. And they began to thrive, and they were doing very well. But there was one plant that had another plant growing right through the middle of it, and it was causing the second plant that I had planted to wither and die. And so I pulled the second plant out, and I let the other plant, I thought I let the plant continue. Turns out that it was one of the original plants that I had planted and pulled out because I thought they weren't doing very well. And now today it's about 10 feet tall and it's completely out of place. And every day I say, thank you, Lady Krishna, because I call the plant Krishna. And I realized out of all of that that I was not the doer, I was not the planter, it was Krishna. And I was simply a tool with which to give that plant the opportunity to grow and to prosper. And today it's completely out of place, but I can't bring myself to pull it out. It struggled for life and to survive, and it thrives today.
That's very nice realization. Thank you very much. Yeah, this is, we should see Krishna everywhere. This is the essence of that chapter, the seventh chapter, where Krishna is telling us how he's present. Bijam mam sarvabhutanam vidiparta sanatanam bhutir bhutimantam asmi tejas tejas vinamaham. What do these things mean? I am the seed of all existences. So Bhakta Patrick's seeing how, you know, from a seed, it has its own impetus, it has its own power. What is a seed? A little, you look at it, you could put a couple next to each other, it's hard to tell what's in there, right? One for some lettuce, they're tiny, tiny. And little dried up things, they can sit for years actually. And then you put it in the ground and a little light, a little soil and rain, and then a lettuce plant comes out. And the next one has a cucumber comes out. They're all packed in a little seed. It's a miracle actually. Bijam mam sarvabhutanam. And Krishna said, I'm the seed of all existences. I'm everywhere in that form of seeds. Every kind of manifestation or creation we see coming from a seed, and everything does. Even thoughts are like seeds, and then it grows from there. The whole creation is going on like that. As we were reading in the Brahma Sanghita earlier, from the Lord, these universes come out like seeds, and then they sprout and grow. So Everywhere around we can see Krishna. The sun and the moon are his eyes. It's the most spectacular thing in the world that when the sun is rising or the sun is setting, Bhakti Leon and I the other day walked out to Nori Point, which is over on near where Satyadev Prabhu lives. We could have practically jumped across to his house. And we watched the sun go down. We were chanting out there on the point, and there was a little bit of a fog along the horizon. So as it was going down, the perfect sphere distorted a little bit. And while I was looking at it, I was saying my Gayatri while he was chanting his japa. And it looked like it almost looked, when I glimpsed it at one point, because it was distorting, it looked like almost like a glowing mushroom cloud or something like that. And I was thinking of what is in the power of the sun and how it's keeping us alive and it's Krishna's eye. But how often do I actually look at it or even think that it's there? And the sun comes up every morning and it's a huge event, but I don't even notice it practically. I'm busy doing other things. I'm distracted. So, you know, this is Krishna consciousness is simple, actually. It just means to notice Krishna. It means become conscious that everything's Krishna. I started writing a little journal because around our house we have a garden. And all the time when I'm out gardening, I find things that I think of as analogous to bhakti. So I started this little notebook called Bhakti Lessons from the Garden. It'll be coming out in about 30 years. And one of them I found, and I take a picture because I you know, to remember what that little incident was. And one of them I found there was a pumice rock in my backyard, a big one, that we had put back there when we were putting in the garden. And, you know, it's a dry rock, but there's all kinds of holes and crevices in it, and somehow or other a seed got in one of those little nooks or just inside the rock, and I came, and lo and behold, one day there was a plant growing out of the rock. And I was looking, I said, how'd you do that? How'd you get in there? And how are you growing? And I looked very carefully, I took a few pictures of it, but it was determined, just like your plant, Bhakti Patrick, and it grew out of the rock. And I was thinking of verses from the Bhagavatam about how bhakti can grow anywhere. Doesn't matter where. You know, Prahlad Maharaj came from a family of demons, and all the demigods were standing around worshiping Lord Nrsimhadev, and he was still angry like anything. And they said, you know, push Prahlad forward. And he came from a demoniac family, he said, so what can I say? But because he had bhakti, it impressed the Lord, and he accepted it. So bhakti can grow anywhere. It can't be stopped by any circumstances. Sometimes we get in a circumstance, we say, well, I can't perform service here because, fill in the blank, because this, that, or there, you know, there's so many circumstances that I can't perform bhakti. But actually, we can perform anywhere. What are some of the places that might be challenging where you could perform bhakti?
Iraq.
In Iraq, yes. Who said that? Yeah, Iraq. Nirkula's has a mother-son relationship with Parthasarathy. She's been taking care of him for the last year, writing to him and sending him care packages every other day. And there he is in the middle of Iraq, and he's reporting all the time about how you know, he's finding opportunities to preach. He put those smart boxes, you know, he put up in the lounges on the military bases. Of course, they filled up with these things called POGs. You know what a POG is? It's a cardboard, it's cardboard money. But he was there, you know, preaching everywhere. And one time, many of you probably read that he had written in his blog about being in Iraq. And a lot of the soldiers there, especially when they're getting ready to get out of Iraq, they start letting down their guard a little bit. And so that's just when you get killed. Because it's dangerous all the time, even though apparently the violence is down a little bit now. If you let your guard down, that's just when you get your head blown off. So soldiers had taken to writing all over the areas where the U.S. military were traversing, complacency kills. So he caught on to that phrase, not just for Iraq, where it's very relevant, but for all of us everywhere. Complacency kills. And so, you know, he saw an instruction from Krishna in that. Don't become complacent. The minute we become complacent, Satyadev Prabhu and I were talking about this the other day, when Krishna gives you a chance to get out, in fact, Prabhupada talked about this. He said, human form of life, we've been in a cage, like a bird. And then human form of life, the cage is opened up. Like Rakshit Prabhu was bringing up these excellent verses about how in the human form of life, labdha sudulabhibam idam bahusambhavante, that you know you have a chance now to get out and realize. So, you know, sometimes the bird, he'll hop out of the cage a little tentatively, look around, then he hops back in. But we have the opportunity to come out of the cage at this time. And so once you're out, then you have to be very careful not to get trapped again. And related to cages, I'll just give another analogy. In the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's an analogy about catching a wild animal. Anybody ever here catch a wild animal? No wild animals? My dad used to catch skunks because they come by our yard. There is a harmless trap. It was put a trap in the backyard, and not like I lived in the woods or anything like that, but it was in the suburbs. But they come down from the hills, and we didn't really want them hanging around because you never know what they're going to do next. And so he'd catch them in this trap and then take them out and let them go somewhere else. So anyway, it says right in the Bhagavatam that if you catch a wild animal and you're keeping him for a little while, and then you start thinking, he's harmless, he's not going to do anything, and you leave the cage open, he'll come out and he'll kill you in the middle of the night. So it's compared to the mind and how when we have controlled the mind, if we let up, if we become complacent and we think, oh, it's okay, it's just a little bit of Maya, there is no such thing. It's kind of like the old saying, like it's like being a little bit pregnant. You know, just a little pregnant. But if you give Maya an inch, she'll take everything. You know, and we'll be pulled back in. So complacency kills. That's a analogy that he drew. And so if we're thinking always of Krishna, we can see him in different places that he's teaching us. And through other people also. We might be preaching or going to meet people in different places and they might say things to us that we can take it sometimes that Krishna is speaking to us. Like I gave this example before, but I was feeling especially vulnerable that day, but I was in Santa Cruz distributing books and I stopped a man, and I started showing him the Bhagavad Gita. He said, I already have the Bhagavad Gita. So I started showing him another book, just sort of automatically, you know. And immediately he snapped at me. He said, don't evangelize me. I told you I had a book already. It's very unusual because I usually don't get that kind of reaction. But it made me instantly think, okay, I have to re-examine how I'm talking to people. It's Krishna speaking to me through this person. So there's all kinds of ways that Krishna will speak to us if we're aware and we're trying to find how he's directing us. And all that, we're still on the same bhajan here. But we can move on because it's an appearance day and we don't have to do anything else. We can just hear and chant as much as we like. Yes, please.
So on the issue of complacency, to me, the three modes of material nature virtually are a state of complacency. And I know in this life I've dealt with complacency many times. I've been successful in business, and I've come to the point where I've asked myself the question, is this all there is? Is this what I have to look forward to? And when I asked that question, I began looking for an answer that was acceptable, that would allow me to find something better, and Krishna consciousness very much did that for me and allowed me to see that Krishna is what I want. All of these things don't really matter, and that's what enabled me to break out of that consistency, of that complacency. And I kind of see the material world the same way. if you don't have Krishna ultimately to reach out to, you're stuck. And you're going to remain stuck forever. Mm.
That's a very, very nice point. I was thinking about the meaning of intoxication recently. And it goes towards this idea of complacency. Because, you know, there's intoxication like drinking and things like that. But there's a subtle intoxication that comes from associating with the three modes of material nature. And so I came up with a sutra in my mind about what intoxication is. And it's anything that allows me to tolerate the miseries of the material world without wanting to get out. In other words, there's all kinds of distractions that we can take part in this world. Like a lot of people take, especially these days, it seems like more than ever people take shelter of sporting events. If there's a way in which you can become so absorbed in a sporting event that my team, you know, people become so passionate about this, seen in the Midwest especially. Maybe there's nothing to do there, I don't know. No, that's not true at all. But people become so passionate about a sporting team that they lose themselves. It's a kind of intoxication. They forget that time is passing, that they're going to die, and so on and so forth. And there are many different ways of distracting, becoming distracted by the modes of material nature, so we don't have that sense of urgency. We become complacent, sort of related. So let's chant Rupa Goswami's Nam Ashtakam, because that will remind us of the positive flow. Who was it who said, oh, it was Bhakta Jonathan was saying, if we get a positive taste, if we have a taste for the holy name, that's the only way that we can become disinterested in Maya and her attractions. So in the blue book, we have the Rupa Goswami's Nam Ashtakam. And Raji Kishori, your job today is to make sure Kosher Rupa has everything she needs and knows what's going on, okay? Looks like we have new blue books today. Thanks, Ramaswamy, wherever you are. Okay, there's, in my book anyway, it's under the blue tab. Are you there? Okay, so all sing it out, the Sanskrit line, and then please repeat. And then Satyadev Prabhu, would you read the translations as we go?
Okay.
Someone could pass him a microphone. Nikila Shruti Mauli Ratnamala. Duti Nirajita Pada Pankajanta. I am mukta kuleru pasyamanam. Puritas tvam harinama sanshayami.
O Harinam, the tips of the toes of your lotus feet are constantly being worshipped by the glowing radiance emanating from the string of gems known as the Upanishads, the crown jewels of all the Vedas. You are eternally adored by liberated souls like Narada and Supadeva. O
Harinam,
I take complete shelter of you.
Jaya Nama Dheya Muni
Vrindagaya
He. Janaranjanaya Paramakshara Krite. Tumanada Radha Pimanagudiri Tang. Nikilogra Tapa Patalimba Lumpasi.
To you, sung by all the sages, you are the supreme combination of syllables, and you bring transcendental bliss to everyone. If a person utters you but once, even disrespectfully, still you relieve his many extreme sufferings.
Drishang tatvandhanam apidishati bhakti pranayinim. Janas tasyo dhatam jagati bhagavan nama tarine.
Janas tasyo dhatam jagati bhagavan nama
Kriti te nirvaktum ka iha mahimanam prabhavati.
O son of the holy name, even a dim glimmer of your splendor swallows the powerful darkness of materialistic life and gives those who are blind to the truth the vision to follow the path of pure devotional service. Who in this world, even if learned and pious, can fully describe your transcendental glories?
Yad Brahma Sakshat Kritinishchayapi.
Yad Brahma Sakshat Kritinishchayapi.
Vinashamayati Vinanabhogai.
Vinashamayati Vinanabhogai.
Apaiti Nama Spuranena Tatte.
Apaiti Nama Spuranena Tatte.
Prarabdha Karmeti Virauti
Vedaha. Prarabdha
Karmeti Virauti Vedaha. O holy name, the Vedas declare that meditation and the impersonal Brahma cannot bring freedom from karmic reactions, that they must be enjoyed or suffered, but that when you manifest in one's consciousness, all karma at once disappears.
Agadamana Yashoda Nandana Nandasuno.
Agadamana Yashoda Nandana Nandasuno.
Kamalanayana Gopi Chandra Vrindavanindraha. Pranata Karuna Krishna Ityaneka Swarupe. Twai Mamaratiru Charvardatam Namadhyaya.
O holy name, you have many forms such as Agadamana, Krishna Vagasura, Yasoda Nandana, darling child of Yasoda, Nandasuno, son of Nanda, Kamalanayana, Lotus Eyed One, Gopi Chandra, Moon of the Gopis, Indra Vanendra, King of Vrindavan, Pranata Karuna, he who is merciful to the surrendered souls, and Krishna. I pray that my love for you in your many forms may greatly increase.
Vacham vachakam ityudeti bhavato nama swarupa dvayam.
Vacham vachakam ityudeti bhavato nama swarupa dvayam.
Purvasmat parameva hanta karunam tatrapi jani mahe.
Purvasmat parameva hanta karunam tatrapi jani mahe.
Yastasmin vihita parabdha nivaha prani samantad bhaved.
Yastasmin vihita parabdha nivaha prani samantad bhaved.
Asyenedam upasya sopihi saranandam bujao majati.
Asyenedam upasya sopihi saranandam bujao majati.
O holy name, you manifest two forms, the supreme person you designate and the sound vibration that designates. We know that the second form is more merciful than the first, because even if a person offends your first form in many ways, you plunge him into an ocean of transcendental bliss if he serves your second form with his voice.
Sudita-shrita janarti rasaye. Ramya chit ghana sukha swarupine.
Ramya chit ghana sukha swarupine.
Nama gokula mahotsavayate.
Nama gokula mahotsavayate.
Krishna purna vapushe namo namaha.
Krishna purna vapushe namo namaha.
O holy name, you destroy the many sufferings of those who take shelter of you. You are the very form of concentrated spiritual bliss, a festival of happiness for Gokula, and the perfect and complete form of Lord Krishna. Again and again I bow down to you.
Narada Vino Jivana.
Narada Vino Jivana.
Sudhormi Nirasa Madhuripura.
Sudhormi Nirasa Madhuripura.
Tam Krishna Namakamam.
Tam Krishna Namakamam.
Spuramera Sanera Sena
Sada.
O enlivener of Narada's Veena, O flood of the waves of sweet nectar, O holy name of Lord Krishna, please forever manifest on my tongue with all your nectarine sweetness.
So do any of these verses that you heard make your heart sing? Yes, Jonathan's heart is singing. Please pass him the microphone so we can hear it.
Well, it goes along with what we're saying to remove ourselves from the influence of Maya, just having the holy names. So the second text, O Hari Nama, all glories to you, sung by all sages. You are the supreme combination of syllables, and you bring transcendental bliss to everyone. If a person utters you but once, even disrespectfully, still you relieve his many extreme sufferings. And it reminds me of being out on Hari Nama and having everybody there, hearing the holy names, and how it must just be changing their lives completely. And it's really neat seeing people stop and dance, or even if they just kind of walk by and smile, and then others stop and they get books and get to talk to devotees, and their lives have just really changed. And you know, for that moment they're brought out of Maya, it's like that seed then too that just goes on and hopefully flourishes.
Yeah, I mean, who can imagine that what's taking place? I mean, we can, many of us imagine, because it's happened to us in different ways at different times, of coming in contact with the devotees, especially the Harinam party. It's such an unusual thing in this world. But I noticed the same thing watching. It's one of the most relishable parts of performing the Harinam Sankirtan is when people come around the corner and they see it, especially when it's going full force. When we're first starting and there's a few devotees there, you know, and then they look and they go, ha, ha, that's not going to happen, you know. And then they come back an hour later, like, oh my goodness, you know, it's just there are waves coming out and nobody can stop it, you know, and the devotees are swept away with them. It's so powerful. Sometimes I remember being in Honolulu, and it's a funny place. It's people think that it's a pleasant place. I've never found it to be that pleasant. I guess because I broke my arm there once and had to stick around. But we'd have Harinam Sankirtan there, and people save up their money to go to Hawaii, you know, sometimes. It becomes a dream of theirs that they'll go somewhere at least once in their life, you know, from the cold winters of Nebraska, and they'll go there, and they'll enjoy. And sort of they feel a little disoriented as it is, not having enjoyed yet once they got there for some time. It either rains or it's too hot or, you know, the hotel room wasn't sufficient, whatever it is. But then they come around the corner and they see the Harinam party for the first time, and I always have the feeling that they've never seen any kind of culture besides a small town, and then they come to Hawaii to find some happiness, and then they see the devotees chanting and the looks on their faces and what must be taking place in their heart, the changes. And we see that in Palo Alto all the time also. People come around the corner. Hari Guru.
Yesterday when we were doing the walking around the streets, I was noticing that people were like eating in the restaurants and trying to find something that they like. And we run by dancing in the streets and looking as happy as we can, and without spending a dollar or a cent, and they're wondering how they are so happy. And people are like waving at them, giving lollipops and showing them the mantras, and people are playing musical instruments, and they're going, well, I'm not being ripped off. What is it that they do? Why are they laughing so much? And why am I not laughing? I'm spending all the money I can, but I don't find it. And I always feel that, you know, this is the trick to happiness. Is not to, it's not in spending or earning it, but it's just to say the names of the Lord and remember his pastimes and share that with others. And that's what is going to get you anywhere.
Nice. Very nice. I was thinking how everyone gets something out of the appearance of the Harinam party, the distribution. One man last night ate 20 lollipops. Yeah, I kept noticing that because I was standing, I had my back to the table, and I kept seeing him get up and walk over. You know, he was a little bit of a slow mover. I don't know what his situation is. He had a broken foot, so he sort of hobbled up to the table, and he was there at least for an hour or two listening to the Harinam. But he'd get up periodically, walk to the table, and sit back down. And afterwards, Kishore, somebody told me, he said, this man ate 20 lollipops. the evidence was next to him on the bench, you know, because apparently there were 20 sticks left over. So everyone finds some happiness in the Harinam party, one way or the other. Yes?
You see that gentleman who took the 20 lollipops, he was tasting the taste of that name in the sweet.
Oh, definitely. Yes, yes. Definitely tasting.
So he was there listening to himself.
Yeah. Everyone's drawn in one way or the other to come in. And also, you know, with the Christians there on the other side, those nights, the first time that happened when I came down there and they showed up, because we went for a year or two and there were no Christians, and then they took our spot. And I remember Bhakta Daniel and I showed up that night in summertime, and we were the only two devotees there, and they were in our spot, and I was thinking, oh no, what's going to happen now? And one other devotee who was first time here from Pune, he came to join the Harinam party, and he looked at me and he looked at Daniel and he thought, is this the whole thing against them? But then as it's turned out over time, that they've actually become allies in a sense, because, or an asset, because there's such a contrast. People dislike their method of pelting everyone with insults as they walk by through a bullhorn. This is kind of preaching people love in Palo Alto. You know, they stand up there, they have these big signs, you know, like during Rath Yatra. I'm just telling Kosher Rupa so she knows that, you know, the turn or burn, that kind of, and they stand literally on a soapbox, and then they just, everyone who goes by, they have something bad to say about them, about how they're definitely going to hell, and things like that. So people from Palo Alto, you know, Northern California, they don't really go for that kind of thing. So they gravitate over towards us and become mesmerized by the Harinam Kirtan. It seems to sort of pressurize everything a little bit more, make it even sweeter. Anybody else? Which verse from the Namashtakam is making your heart sing? Vraji Kishori was going to say something.
Harinam?
Yes.
Because as I was giving lollipops yesterday, I've noticed that a lot of people that have kids with them, sometimes they don't take lollipops. They don't mind kids taking them, but they don't on the menu. And yesterday, one of my realizations was that how it is said that if a son of a family would take up to Krishna consciousness and would become a devotee of Krishna, how the whole family, generations behind and ahead, are going to be liberating. And I was thinking, those parents did something right, because kids took the lollipop and ate the sun.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you. Srivas Pandit was about to say. No? Okay. Anyone moved by the verses? Yes. Hari Guru again?
Just John Santoro had mentioned this text too, where he says, "You bring transcendental bliss to everyone." And and you were talking about Honolulu, and it just reminded me that, you know, people go there to surf, and the ocean is so salty that, and it's so much in contrast to the ocean that we are talking about here. Mm-hmm. And people are trying to get immersed in some ocean, but they don't know where to, and they end up in Honolulu, still they are salty and bitter.
I think we found it though. Definitely. The Harinam party has become an ocean. It's a real place you can take shelter. You know, everyone knows now when you come to that Harinam party, always say there's a certain point at which that ocean really opens up. And I say that it's when Rakshit Prabhu starts to dance. I mean, he's always dancing in his mind and his heart, but when I see him lift off the ground, I know that we've hit critical mass. It's the barometer. Don't mind, Hare Krishna. So we're continuing on. Today, what we have planned, we have several devotees have been meditating deeply on Lord Balaram. I mean, all of you have. But I asked a few devotees if they'd say some things, some pointed words about Balaram and his appearance day, just according to their own realization, and bringing in anything that they'd like. And I have a list here, but out of everyone on the list, there's only two devotees here. So, would you mind starting now?
Sure.
Okay. Bhagavad Gita, because who can talk about their Krishna better than Krishna himself? and I relish the purport, you know, that's Prabhupada's purport, but also the insight of all the Vaishnavacharyas is contained within that purport. And whenever I read it, I feel especially fortunate to be in the association with devotees on the appearance day of the Lord and remembering his pastime. And then this purport and this verse just emphasizes our good fortune. And the,
more comfortable with this, or you want to hold that?
I'll be more comfortable with that. We don't have very long. How much time should I take?
You've got all day.
I was thinking I'd have like 10 minutes or something. Does anybody know what 4-9 is?
You gotta turn it on.
Without looking, does anybody know 4-9? Belt it out. Evam yo viti tat vataha viti sorjuna. Yay, very good. So Krishna says, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, Arjuna. How nice. It sounds so easy. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, upon leaving the body, does not take birth again in the material world. It just sounds too easy. Purport, but it's not. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage. And therefore, he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, someone who's realized, who's actually seeing Krishna face to face, that person, when he leaves his body, he goes back to the spiritual world. But that's not what Prabhupada says. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. So it doesn't seem right. How could it be so easy? Just remembering the Lord, one can be liberated. When the yogis and the impersonalists have to spend many, many births. Even then, liberation, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, is only partial, and there is the risk of returning to this material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body, and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations. Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadyam, Anantarupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same, Supreme Personality of Godhead.
One has to understand this fact with conviction, and although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers, as stated in the Vedas, in the Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Devo Nitya Lila Narakto Bhakta Vyapi Vidyantar Atma. The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationship with his unalloyed devotees. So, Prabhupada's saying here, we have to understand this with conviction, even though it's incomprehensible. So it's not expected that we'll have this full realization of the Lord and what, you know, how great he is, because he's unlimited. How much can we know? As much as he allows us. But on faith, on conviction, if we have this conviction that the Lord is great and the Lord can come and that he does and that he performs these transcendental pastimes, even though they're inconceivable, there's great merit in that. This Vedic version is confirmed in the verse in the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. So one who accepts the authorities of the Vedas and accepts the authority of Krishna's own statement, then he attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. Vedic version, tattvamasi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or who says unto the Lord, "You are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead," is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently, his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection. And this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion. Tam evat viditvati mrityum eti nanya panta vidyate yanaya. One can attain the perfectional stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. That's a quotation from the Svatara Upanishad, 338. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently, he will not attain salvation, simply so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey, or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed-up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. So, isn't that an encouraging purport? Aren't we the most fortunate beings in San Jose, maybe in the whole Bay Area? Well, there's some fortunate beings over there in Berkeley too. Anyway, to be sitting here, I don't know, one who shows up here, one who's fasting today, you know, this means we're understanding something, we're having some faith in the auspicious and unique and inconceivably wonderful appearance of the Lord. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be fasting. We wouldn't be coming here to hear and chant together. So, as far as I'm concerned, I'm sitting in the assembly of transcendental liberated souls. And I'm feeling very fortunate. So, I printed out some things about Lord Balaram I'd like to read, and then we can just open it up for comments. So, Lord Balaram, you know, who is Lord Balaram? And he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's the fountainhead of all incarnations. So, we know that Krishna has unlimited incarnations, and Krishna's he's the cause of all causes. So he's the original, he's Swayam Bhagavan. And his first he first expands himself playfully as Lord Balaram. So Balaram's his second body. They are both the same identity. They differ only in form. Balaram is the first bodily expansion of Krishna, and he assists in Lord Krishna's transcendental pastimes. He is the source of the entire spiritual world and is the Adi Guru, the original spiritual master. So, Krishna and Balaram are identical, but their form is different. So who can say how their form is different?
Balaram's white.
Balaram's white. You have to raise your hands and we'll pass the microphones. So Balaram's white. What are some other distinctions? Where's the microphone? Let's see. There we go. Now, one more time, please. So Krishna carries the flute and Balaram carries the plow.
Krishna's blue and Balaram's white.
Krishna's blue, Balaram's white. Balaram has a white feather?
We just did this section of you know, kind of a chapter for Sunday school kids, so I remember it very well.
Balaram is a big brother, but Balaram lives on Krishna's shoulders.
He rests on Krishna's shoulders, yeah. Okay, very nice. Oh, Ramzan, okay.
Krishna wears yellow garments and Balaram wears blue garments.
Hmm.
Balaram is a Adi Guru. But not Krishna. The soul is, he considers the soul, his, Lord Krishna considers his soul as Radharani. Lord Balaram considers his soul as Krishna.
How about, we're talking about their how they're dressed, what they look like.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, their difference in their forms.
Oh, okay.
But thank you. Now I'll continue on. So he's the Adi Guru. So all spiritual potency, all realization, all wonderful insights are coming originally from Lord Balaram, and all gurus in the line are representatives of Lord Balaram in that transcendental potency. I was reading, lately I've been reading the ninth canto. I'm getting just to the end of the ninth canto. And in the ninth canto, Sukadeva Goswami, he's starting to talk about the descendants of the sun god and the descendants of the moon god. And he's talking about the Yadu dynasty and their descendants. And then he starts talking, he's giving Sukadeva Goswami, he's telling Maharaj Prickett about how special Lord Krishna's appearance is. And he actually mentions Kali Yuga. He says that Lord Krishna is going to appear, but in the Kali Yuga, very, very fortunate souls are going to remember that appearance. And they're also going to, one thing they're particularly going to remember and get benefit from is Lord Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita. And those who study Bhagavad Gita in the Kali Yuga and remember that and appreciate that, he says they'll get liberation by that. And so Lord Krishna, when he expands, you know, when he expands and he's performing different pastimes outside of Vrindavan, he's expanding himself first as Balaram and then the Chaturvyuha, and these different pastimes are occurring. So when Krishna's, sometimes it's said that when Krishna's speaking Bhagavad Gita, he's called Vasudev Krishna. It's actually an expansion. So anyway, this is Lord Balaram. And then Lord Balaram, it says that he assumes five other forms to serve Krishna. So even he's serving Lord Krishna. He himself helps in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. He does the work of creation in four other forms called the Chaturvyuha. And they all have forearm forms. And they are known as, who knows the names of the Chaturvyuha? Someone raise your hand and belt it out. Okay, in the back there.
Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva.
Yes, very good. Thank you very much. Yeah, so the first expansion is called the Chaturvyuha. Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyum, and Anirudh. So how does Balaram help serve Lord Krishna in this manifestation? He has five services. He helps in the pastimes of the Lord, and he does the creation. He serves Krishna by making this creation in the form of the Chaturvyuha. He executes the orders of Lord Krishna in the work of creation, and in the form of Sesha, he serves Sri Krishna in various ways. In all the forms, he tastes the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna. No one can approach Krishna without first getting the mercy of Baladev. So even everyone, even Krishna himself, is relishing service to God. So Krishna, he comes as Lord Chaitanya to experience the nectar of devotion and service. And Lord Balaram, he's also. Can we, maybe we move up and there's a lot more space in the back too. If more people come in. So I just wanted to speak something about Lord Balaram's descent, because it's very mysterious. Whenever Krishna appears in the material world, he is accompanied by his associates and paraphernalia. 5,000 years ago, when Krishna descended into the material world, he was first preceded by Baladev. Only after Baladev gave his mercy did Krishna descend. Such is the intimate relationship between Krishna and Baladev. When Baladev appeared as a seventh child in the womb of Devaki, she could understand that this was a divine child, and this made her all the more concerned about his safety. Even Kamsa could sense his potency, and he became fearful, thinking that he may be tricked by the prophecy, and that he would be slain, not by the eighth child of Devaki, but maybe by the seventh child. So he was starting to plan something evil. At this time, Krishna instructed Yogamaya, his internal potency, to transfer the unborn child of the womb of Devaki to that of Rohini, one of the other wives of Vasudeva, who was hiding from Kamsa in the house of Nanda Maharaj in Gokula. So Krishna, Baladev first appears in the womb of Rohini, and Kamsa senses something's up, and then Krishna instructs Yogamaya to transfer the child that's in the womb of Devaki into the womb of Rohini, who was one of Vasudeva's wives. I think he had 10 wives. And so she was taking shelter of Nanda Maharaj. In this way, Balaram was born in Gokul under the protection of Nanda Maharaj. Gargamuni, the venerable guru of the family priest of the Yadu dynasty, revealed to Rohini that the child she was carrying was indeed that of her husband Vasudeva. Just imagine how she must have felt. My husband's in prison and suddenly I'm pregnant. How is this? But the all-knowing priest Gargamuni assured her, no, this is Vasudeva's son. At the time of the name-giving ceremony, he named the child Rama, one who gives all pleasure. Referring to the immense strength of the child, Gargamuni predicted that he will also be known as Balaram, Bala meaning strength. Since he was forcibly attracted by the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, he was also called Shankarshana. Oh. As the son of Rohini, he was known as Rohini Nandan. And as the elder brother of Krishna, he was also known as Dauji. Wow. Very good. There's something here about the form of Balaram. Powerful Lord Balaram is 16 years old. He's full of luster, of youth. He has a fair complexion. His color is the color of crystal. Wow. He wears blue garments and a garland of forest flowers. His handsome hair is tied in a graceful top knot. Splendid earrings adorn his ears, and his neck is splendidly decorated with garlands of flowers and strings of jewels. Splendid armlets and bracelets ornament Dauji's graceful and very strong arms, and his feet are decorated with splendid jeweled anklets. Lord Balaram's beauty is enhanced by the earrings touching his cheeks. His face is decorated with tilak made from musk. Wow. And his broad chest is ornamented with a garland of gunja. What's gunja?
But there's also a little berry that
comes on. So little berries?
Well, it's a red.
Before they get all dried out?
Or no, they are dried.
Dried out and then made into a garland. Balaram's voice is very grave and his arms are very long, touching his thighs. The splendor of Lord Balaram's transcendental form eclipses many millions of glistening rising moons, and the slightest scent of his boundless strength is sufficient to destroy many armies of demons. Although he knows the supernatural power of his younger brother, Krishna, still out of love for him, he never leaves Krishna alone in the forest even for a moment. He's got to protect his little brother. Balaram is Sri Krishna's dearest friend, and he is the great reservoir of nectar, of mellows, of many kinds of transcendental pastimes. Should I continue? Or?
Yeah, if you want to answer, then I'll have to record.
Okay. I'm going to read my favorite pastime of, this is just a short abbreviated version of, there's a few pastimes of Lord Balaram here, and this is my favorite one. This is the slaying of Denukasura. Denukasura was a powerful demon who had assumed the form of an ass. With his demon friends, he was occupying Tullivan, one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Out of fear of these demons, no one could approach Tullivan and enjoy the numerous flowers and fruits in the forest. Balaram, induced by his cowherd friends, entered the forest desiring to kill the demons. He began shaking fruit trees, making a big noise. Dainuka, furious at this intrusion, attacked Balaram with his rear legs. But Balaram easily picked him up by the legs and whirled him around until he was dead. As the other demon friends, actually he threw him into the tops of the trees, right? But as he was wheeling him around, the demon lost his life. And he just tossed him into the trees. As the other demon friends of Dainuka rushed to attack, Krishna and Balaram picked them up and threw them onto the trees, killing them. Soon the forest was free of demons, and it appeared that the bent trees were being directed by Balaram to pay obeisances to Krishna. Wow. Sorry. Well, I like to think of Lord Balaram as the life of my life, the strength of my life, and that's something I can relate to. Krishna is the cause of all causes. I like to think of Krishna the way he recommends Arjuna to think of him in the Bhagavad Gita. That's something that's real to me. Because I am here in this material world and I don't have transcendental eyes, but I can appreciate the Lord for being the source of my life, the older than the oldest, the cause of all causes, smaller than the smallest, the knower of everything. So Lord Balaram, he's the first expansion of Krishna, and from him my life, my power, whatever I know, all insight, all intelligence, all any power that we have. There's one nice verse in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where Sukadeva Goswami, he's describing, he's talking about the Paramatma. And he tells Parikit Maharaj how he can be aware of the Paramatma. And he says that Bhagavan Sarvabhuteshu Lakshita Swapmanahari Drishar Bhujari Birdrishta Lakshinaranamapakai. He says that Lord Hari, he's situated there in the heart with the soul. And one can detect this by his acts of whenever we use our intelligence, whenever we perceive or know something, and by our acts of seeing. This ability is coming from the Paramatma situated within the heart. And the Paramatma is expanding from Lord Balaram. So, in this way, Balaram is very, very, very close to us in our every act of seeing, in our every act of understanding. That ability is coming from Lord Balaram. And it's a nice meditation when we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. To think of our life and how it's being maintained by Balaram.
Ijo.
Ijo.